Good afternoon. Today I've decided to begin reading aloud The Real RFK Jr., Trials of a Truth Warrior by Dick Russell. I have not been able to see a audio version of this book out there in the world, and I have a special concern that this book is being, I won't say blacklisted, but I will say that it is being oppressed, if you will, at least in the state of California. And I am going to try to get the word out about this candidate running for an independent campaign for president. So my experience was trying to get this book out of my library in the beginning, and had to go to my inner loan library, and then, which is out of my county, sometimes out of my state. The other problem was when I went to buy the book, I decided to check Barnes and Noble to see if it was on its shelf, if this book was on its shelf. They didn't have it in any of their stores at all. And I asked why, and they said, oh, I don't know, it's, you know, we can get it for you, but it's just not here. And I said, okay, well, he's running for president, and I believe you need to, like, stock it on your shelf so people can learn about him. So they special ordered the book, and I bought it. You know, I gave it to my mom. The thing is that I'm not sure if it's the publisher that's not producing the book enough or what, but it's very odd to me that my state and my libraries, my bookstores near me, are not carrying this title. And when I looked online, I did not see that there was an audio version. There is a hardcover version, which is, you know, kind of pricey for people who can't afford to hardly put food on their table, right? And there was a Kindle version, which not everybody has a Kindle. So I'm going to put this book into audio format just to get it out into the world, at least here on my podcast, and put it out on X. It's called The Real RFK Jr., Trials of a Truth Warrior. There's been a movie made of it, too. You might have heard about that, or maybe you haven't. There's a great documentary movie made based on this book. So here we go. I'm going to open the page and read from the beginning. There's a dedication. This book is dedicated to reclaiming the futures that honor the many sacrifices of our past and the dreams that were deferred. Here's a note to the readers. The quotations from RFK Jr. that are woven through the manuscript come from a wide variety of sources, including my interviews with him, articles and op-eds he wrote, and of course, his books. Here's the prologue. It would be difficult for you to have lived in America and not have a negative picture of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You may recall him as the country's leading champion of the environment for most of his adult life, but this has been obfuscated in recent years by the mass media's labeling of him as an quote-unquote anti-vaxxer and peddler of misinformation. No longer does his name appear on op-eds, nor are his views ever aired on the nightly news programs. As he said in a nearly two-hour oration on April 2023, announcing his intention to run for the president, "This is what happens when you censor somebody for 8 years. I've got a lot to talk about." Indeed, he does, and has for a long time. In this book, you're going to read the story of the real RFK Jr., not the flimsy caricature, but the story of a robust, passionate leader who has overcome personal tragedy to become a tireless warrior for justice, justice for children, for every ethnicity, for the evaporating middle class, and for both Republicans and Democrats. You will come away with a more complete portrait of someone who represents the future and, most importantly, our children's future. Following his announcement, he sat at the desk in his book-lined study and filmed a video describing why he was, at 69, finally running for high office. He began with a clip of his father, Robert F. Kennedy, addressing a crowd during his 1968 presidential campaign that was cut short by an assassin's bullet. And here's a quote. "What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but love and wisdom and compassion toward one another." End quote. Then Bobby then said, "Every nation has a darker side, and the easiest thing for a politician to do is to appeal to our hatred, our anger, and our bigotry and greed and xenophobia and all the alchemies of demagoguery. My father and my uncle had a vision for America, a vision for racial harmony, of prosperity for all Americans, of peace in the world, and honest government. Their lives were tragically cut short, and America took a different path. Yet the possibility they foresaw is still alive, the America that almost was, and yet may be. I've been fighting corporate corruption my entire life, but I understand that today the problem is much larger than a few crooked individuals. The problem is a system that no longer serves the people, and a people who are so divided and so fearful that they are easily ruled. It's time to unlearn the reflexes of fear and blame and find ways to unify ourselves and turn our country around. I won't pretend to you that it will be easy, but I know what it will take. My father said it. Love, wisdom, and compassion toward one another. And that's where we need to start. We will scale down the war machine and bring our resources home. We will rebuild our water systems, repair our roads, modernize our railroads, and clean up our environment. We will also clean up government and earn back the people's trust. We will end the secrecy, the censorship, and the surveillance. We will again be a fearless land of liberty. The cost of freedom is always high, but Americans have always paid it." And that was a quote from President John F. Kennedy at the very end of that. "We will face honesty, the darker parts of our history and the genocide and the racism, not to shame or blame or punish, but to repair at best we can in the spirit of compassion and kindness toward all. I'm inviting all of you to join me to create an America that we can believe in and be proud of again. I'm Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I'm running for President of the United States." And that ends the prologue. I'm going to go on to chapter one. This might make this first initial podcast a bit longer than I thought it would be. I'm going to take the cover off the book so I won't have to mess with that. Okay, so here's chapter one. It's called "A Man for Our Time." And there's a quote by his father in the beginning of the chapter. "Few are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change." That's by Robert F. Kennedy in June 1966. On April 19, 2023, the son and namesake of the man who made that statement stood before a standing room only crowd of some 2,000 people inside the grand ballroom of Boston's Park Plaza Hotel. Speaking without notes for almost 2 hours, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. declared his candidacy for the Democratic nomination in the next presidential election. "My mission over the next 18 months of this campaign and throughout my presidency," he said, "will be to end the corrupt merger of state and corporate power that is threatening to impose a new kind of corporate feudalism in our country." As the audience cheered and applauded, he continued, "We have a polarization in this country today that is so toxic and so dangerous. People are preparing for a sort of dystopian future." He would seek to end the division by encouraging people to talk about the values that we have in common rather than the issues that keep us apart. I'm going to do that by telling the truth to the American people. And just as an aside, I want to say this book was written in, let's see, what's the publication? Yeah, in 2023, prior to Kennedy's announcing his Declaration of Independence. Just put that in your mind. So he's now left the party and is running independent, and for reasons maybe you don't know about, but maybe I'll share along the way. Okay, so we're going to turn that page now. So he just announced, and let's see, sorry for the interruption. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has that moral courage that his father, Senator Robert Kennedy, wrote about. Many controversial figures who go against the grain disappear when faced with widespread attacks and retreat into their comfortable lives. Kennedy has endured hit pieces from leading newspapers and magazines. His books have been censored more than any books in the recent memory. His words have been taken out of context and used to attack him. He's been vilified, deplatformed, ostracized, and named as part of a so-called disinformation dozen. But Bobby Kennedy, as he, like his father, is widely known, isn't going anywhere. He has spent the past 40 years taking on the country's worst polluters and standing against the corporate capture of regulatory agencies and media monopolies. Now he has also emerged as a champion of democracy when it has never been under such threat. He's brought hundreds of lawsuits. He's stood up, spoken out, and never backed down. Gavin DeBecker, best-selling author of The Gift of Fear and widely considered the nation's leading private security expert, put it like this: Democrats need a candidate. If they want to get serious, it's not going to be Biden or the vice president. And they ought to be knocking on the door of people like Bobby, who have shown their courage, who know how broken things are and could really fix them. Nobody has spoken out so vociferously about the takeover of America that is underway. As Bobby wrote, the big tech, big data, big pharma, big carbon and chemical industrial food plutocrats and their allies in the military-industrial complex and intelligence apparatus now control our government. These plutocrats have twisted the language of democracy, equity, and free markets to transform our exemplary democracy into a corrupt system of corporate crony capitalism. The tragic outcome for America has been a cushy socialism for the rich and a savage and bloody free market for the poor. America has devolved into a corporate kleptocracy addicted to a war economy abroad and a security and surveillance state at home. The upper echelons of the Democratic Party are now pro-censorship, pro-war neocons who wear woke bobbleheads to disguise and soften their belligerent totalitarian agendas for our country and the world. 2 weeks before his filing to run, Kennedy and Children's Health Kennedy and Children's Health Defense, CHD, the nonprofit organization he founded in 2018, mounted a class action lawsuit against President Joe Biden, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and other top administration officials and federal agencies, accusing them of waging a systematic concerted campaign to compel the country's three largest social media companies to censor constitutionally protected speech. The 120-page complaint was submitted on behalf of the more than 80% of Americans who access news online, principally from Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. According to the plaintiffs, these companies have been induced to stifle viewpoints that the government disfavors to suppress facts that government does not want the public to hear, and to silence specific speakers. In every case, critics of federal policy, whom the government has targeted by name. Let me read that again. According to the plaintiffs, these companies have been induced to stifle viewpoints that the government disfavors, to suppress facts that the government does not want the public to hear, and to silence specific speakers, in every case critics of federal policy, whom the government has targeted by name. As Kennedy wrote, "This collaboration is an assault on the most fundamental foundation stone of American democracy, the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights." Kennedy and the CHD filed another recent suit to apply antitrust laws against the Trusted News Initiative, TNI, an approach launched by BBC in 2020 to a dozen news and social media networks in the United States, asking them to pretend not to be competitors, but come together and censor information from alternative sites that represent a threat to their business model. Quote, "We need to choke them off. We need to crush them," an internal TNI memo said. Two landmark legal victories preceded those efforts to protect free speech. In January 2023, CHD, which is Children's Health Defense, prevailed when the New York Supreme Court ruled that a mandate requiring health workers to receive a COVID vaccine was null, void, and of no effect. 2 days after that, a federal court in California granted CHD's request for a preliminary injunction blocking a California law that would have allowed punishment of doctors by the state's medical boards for allegedly spreading COVID misinformation. As Bobby says, we have the forms of democracy. We have elections, but do individuals really have any bearing over most of their political officials or the agencies of government? I would say no. These are controlled by money. It's not really a democracy anymore. It's more of an oligarchy or a plutocracy that only responds to the needs of the rich and of corporations, paying the lobby election costs of the politicians, who then become their indentured servants on Capitol Hill. The result is not only the rapid erosion of our time-honored civil liberties. Greed and corruption dominate our politics, our leading businesses, and our sources of information. Fear, anxiety, and mistrust run rampant in the population. Some question whether the republic can even survive. At this precipice, leaders with passion, purpose, and perseverance are rare. Demagogues trumpet false promises while enriching themselves Demagogues trumpet false promises while enriching themselves with contributions from the top 1%. This is not about left or right. It is about right or wrong. We are destroying the very fabric of our country. In Bobby's words, we have kids who are going to dilapidated schools. We have our infrastructure falling apart. We have a middle class in this country that has been hollowed out and destroyed, and we need to start paying attention to these problems here at home and solving them. During a period when income inequality soared to unprecedented levels, Bobby's research found these figures. Quote, "During COVID, in the United States alone, there was a $3.8 trillion shift in wealth upward, largely from the middle class and the poor in our country to, at least in part, this new oligarchy of billionaires. There were nearly 500 new billionaires created during the pandemic. A lot of the money ended up concentrating, ironically or coincidentally, in the social media companies that were actually benefiting from the lockdowns, and that were simultaneously censoring criticism of lockdowns. Those companies have strong entanglements with the Pentagon and also the intelligence agencies." That's end quote there. 10 days before announcing his presidential candidacy, Kennedy journeyed to the same neighborhood in Watts, where his father had addressed a teeming crowd of predominantly African Americans shortly before the California Democratic primary in 1968. Watts had given 95% of its vote to the senator, helping put the nomination in his grasp shortly before he was assassinated. "My dad was very proud of that," Bobby explained to a new generation. "He'd come here to join a group of African-American students from the University of Southern California and several dozen others planting a healing garden for the Watts Community's Legacy Project. Wearing a short-sleeved white shirt and dark jeans, Kennedy was introduced with these words, 'Today, we have somebody who represents a legacy and a history who is also a survivor.'" He had recently traveled to East Palestine, Ohio, where the disastrous wreck of a Norfolk Southern train carrying hazardous chemicals meant the people are now drinking poison water, and their cats are dying, and their cows are dying, and their children are now exposed to dioxin, and the most toxic molecule we know that's not radioactive. And it spread over the landscape. He said it didn't have to happen. If the train had carried two engineers instead of one and had used electronically controlled brakes and sensors on every wheel, the catastrophic incident would have been avoided. Bobby wants to put people over profits. He described to the crowd how he became an environmental lawyer, targeting the toxic chemicals dumped by large corporations into the Hudson River that were wiping out a subsistence fishery. "I discovered early on that environmental injury was theft and disproportionately harmed people who were black and poor," he said. His first client had been the NAACP, a successful legal action on behalf of a small town that did not have the political power to defend themselves. Sorry, I had to fix my glasses. Let me go back to read that. Sorry. His first client had been the NAACP, a successful legal action on behalf of a small town that did not have the political power to defend themselves from this onslaught. But he also understood that it's our environment belonging to all of us, regardless of race, color, or creed. He went on to form the Waterkeeper Alliance, which has grown to become the largest water protection group in the world. Bobby talked of his pivotal involvement in the 1990s, helping to forge an agreement to protect the New York watershed. In the course of that, he sued the city over the 100-plus sewage treatment plants discharging into the drinking water supply for Harlem, the South Bronx, and the Lower East Side. But this was hardly the only impact on the nation's most vulnerable populations. Kennedy addressed the lockdowns and school closures during the COVID-19 pandemic. The playgrounds that they couldn't close, they removed the basketball hoops. If you lived in a poor neighborhood, you got locked indoors. For a lot of those kids, the only hot meal that they had was at school. He added, "It was a war on the poor all over the world. There were 10,000 kids in Africa that were dying of starvation every month because of lockdowns and lack of access to medication for dysentery and malaria. The middle class didn't do much better." The name Children's Health Defense is not coincidental. Two decades ago, Bobby said, "My job is to be able to look myself in the mirror and say that I spent my short time on this planet trying to make it a better place for my children." When he began raising questions about the wisdom of subjecting kids to vaccines that were not adequately safety tested, he asked himself, quote, "Am I going to ignore what's being done, or does this knowledge compel me to go into the battlefield on an issue that I really don't want to have anything to do with?" Based on the science that he had studied, he felt obligated to follow what he believed was right, no matter what. I've known Bobby Kennedy for more than two decades, as a colleague and a friend. We met in 1998, amid our involvement in a successful campaign to preserve the last pristine birthing lagoon of the California gray whales from industrial salt works along Mexico's Baja Peninsula. Our mutual concern and love for the natural environment brought us together for fishing and falconry trips. Together, we then investigated voter fraud in the 2004 presidential election for a magazine article and co-wrote a book called Climate in Crisis on the Greed and Corruption of the Oil and Coal Oligarchs. The real RFK Jr. is the product of dozens of interviews with Bobby, his family and longtime friends, and his army of like-minded associates in the battles he's fought. I was also given unprecedented access to his private archive, including personal journals. I approached my publisher about writing this book at a time when Bobby was being excoriated as an anti-vaxxer, becoming persona non grata to mainstream media and deplatformed by social media giants, with the contagion-spreading virus like no longtime co-workers and even family members. Let me read that part again. I approached my publisher about writing this book at a time when Bobby was being excoriated as an anti-vaxxer, becoming persona non grata to mainstream media and deplatformed by social media giants with the contagion spreading virus like to longtime co-workers and even family members. This portrait is an attempt to set the record straight about a man who does not fit conventional definitions. His outside-the-box thinking has seen him cross over into what others consider enemy territory on numerous occasions. He's never towed the party line. Moral courage requires both nuance and the ability to change when situations change or when new information becomes available. There is no stronger advocate for free market capitalism than myself, Bobby has said, because I believe it's the most efficient and democratic way to distribute the goods of the land. While free markets tend to democratize a society, unfettered capitalism invariably leads to corporate control of government. Bobby has dedicated much of his energy toward combating agency capture at the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the other government agencies. In Bobby's view, the best solution to the climate crisis is democratizing the energy grid, ending the obscene subsidies to big carbon, and rationalizing markets to turn every American into an energy entrepreneur and every home into a power plant. But Bill Gates and the deep state are advocating top-down capital incentive geoengineering solutions that expand authoritarian controls. Again, these issues are important to all Americans. They transcend politics, and they must. It is no accident that highly unlikely allies have discovered a surprising commonality. One of these is Catherine Austin Fitz, former managing director of the investment firm Dillon Reed Incorporated, who served under President George H.W. Bush as Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. She left all that behind to become a crusader against government fraud. Fitz told me, quote, "Every once in a while, I've met someone who truly believed in and understood the power of the law, had incredible integrity, and was willing to do the unbelievably hard work. Bobby Kennedy Jr. defines that, end quote. While he's not the only person fighting the greed that imperils our future, he is a passionate, sincere, and tireless advocate for these distinctly American values. Wade Davis, an anthropology professor and the award-winning author of 23 books on natural history, said of Bobby after rafting the Colorado River in his company, I had never met a person whose love of country was so sincere and yet so free of chauvinistic cant. I found him to be an extraordinary man, charismatic and brash, decent and true, with a terrific sense of humor and immense reservoirs of physical energy and strength. All but forgotten in the torrent of negative publicity surrounding Bobby in recent years is that no one else has proved so successful as an environmental advocate and champion of the powerless. We're not protecting the environment just for the sake of the fish and the birds, he said in his Boston announcement speech. We're protecting it for our own sake, because those things enrich us. They enrich us economically, spiritually, culturally. If we want to meet our obligations as a generation, as a civilization, as a nation, which is to create communities for our children and provide them with the same opportunities for dignity and enrichment and prosperity and good health as the communities that our parents gave us, we have to start by protecting our environmental infrastructure, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the wildlife. He has won or favorably settled more than 500 environmental lawsuits, almost all involving scientific controversies. The Waterkeeper Alliance now has 350 chapters on waterways and more than 1 million volunteers in 46 countries. In its fifth year of existence, the nonprofit Children's Health Defense has more than 50 active lawsuits and 20 chapters globally. In the process of building these organizations, Kennedy has written 4 best-selling books. His latest, The Real Anthony Fauci, sold more than 1 million copies despite being completely ignored by reviewers. And as we all know, he's also written the next book after that one, which is the Wuhan book, which I'm also reading out loud here. If you want to listen to that one, you can go ahead and listen to that one. It's here in the podcast. Okay. This biographical analysis opens with a look back at his childhood, where Bobby grew up debating history and current events at the Kennedy dinner table. His fascination with animals, both wild and domestic, intersected with the family support of Rachel Carson, much maligned by Monsanto and the chemical company's media allies for her campaign to ban DDT. The scientist became a kind of emblem for Bobby's initial understanding of injustice, as well as environmental degradation. He would eventually be part of successful legal efforts against Monsanto's malfeasance that resulted in unprecedented jury awards to citizens injured by its Roundup weed killer and its active ingredient, glyphosate. Following the traumatic assassinations of his uncle, President Kennedy, and 5 years later, his father, Bobby's rebellious teenage years found him leaving privilege behind and learning lessons riding freight trains and with hobos and among indigenous tribes in Latin America. In his 20s, he developed organizational skills in planning complicated river trips in remote reaches of the Amazon. Enrolled at Harvard, he immersed himself in studying the life of civil rights legend Judge Frank Johnson, moving to Alabama for a year of populist education that led to publication of his first book. In law school, facing a crisis with addiction, Bobby came to an awakening that anything I do that is durable or persistent or meaningful has to come from a spiritual place. Let me read that again. I love this. In law school, Facing a crisis with addiction, Bobby came to an awakening that, quote, anything I do that is durable or persistent or meaningful has to come from a spiritual place, end quote. That rebirth allowed him to set out on a journey of helping others. His lawyer friend Chris Bartle told me, in our small circle, I'd say there are 25 people who got sober because of Bobby. And there are literally hundreds of people that Bobby has helped. While remaining to this day an active participant in Alcoholics Anonymous, his desire to help others suffering from addictions led naturally to a broader sense of purpose. Following his personal recovery in the early 1980s, Bobby joined Hudson River Keeper and the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, as a primary litigator and served as founding professor for Pace University's Environmental Law Clinic. There, he obtained a special court order allowing his students to try cases in state and federal courtrooms and won landmark statutory decisions forcing municipalities and industries to cease their polluting discharges. Once a national disgrace, the Hudson River and its watershed were transformed into flourishing fisheries and swimmable waters, inspiring the creation of river keepers all across the country and eventually the globe. New York Environmental Police Captain Ron Gatto, who went up against his bosses to expose illegal dumping, recalled becoming part of the extended family clan. Quote, going to his house for capture the flag games, Bobby not only invited famous people like Alec Baldwin, but also the plumber, the carpenter, and the mechanic, end quote, Gatto recalls. Bobby's campaign to curtail the insidious practices of the factory farming giant Smithfield Foods found him shadowed by a hired goon in rural America. His riverkeeper partner in North Carolina, an ex-Marine turned commercial fisherman named Rick Dove, told me, what impressed me most about Bobby was his fearlessness. I think he would have made a great Marine. Alongside Gatto, Dove, and others, Bobby also became an avid student of science. What makes Bobby so unique is his desire to understand all the technical aspects, said NRDC Executive Director John Adams. Not just the legal questions involved in environmentalism, but the science and nature as well. Bobby spearheaded development of the NRDC pioneering international program for environment, energy, and human rights, traveling to Canada and Latin America to assist local people in safeguarding their homeland and opposing large-scale energy and extractive projects in remote wilderness areas. Bobby elaborated, My father believed that America should be an exemplary nation, but we would never live up to that to our promise as a moral authority around the world unless we first went back and corrected or made meaningful amends, not only for slavery, but the genocide of the American Indian. No environmental group had ever explored the possibility of working with a major oil company in creating regulatory structure beyond the governmental. Let me read that again. No environmental group had ever explored the possibility of working with a major oil company in creating a regulatory structure beyond the governmental. In Ecuador, Bobby proposed to Conoco's lawyers, in addition to doing the independent environmental oversight and management plan, would you also be willing to give a portion of your profits to the Indian community for rainforest preservation and development projects? The company's attorneys gave a resounding yes, but a consortium of environmental organizations still sought to ban Conoco's drilling rights altogether and saw no need to involve the locals. A stalemate resulted. As one observer described the situation, Bobby was moving beyond the conventional wisdom of the environmental movement. He was risking his reputation in seeking a new, enlarged, and some believed, a dangerous agenda. In French-speaking Canada, Bobby joined with tribal leaders in organizing river expeditions to oppose the Hydro-Québec utility's plan to flood more than 1,300 square miles with several dozen massive dams. Bobby faced the company's helicopters, monitoring his every move. Eventually, he used his political clout to influence New York State to cancel billions in contracts for purchasing the electricity. For the first time in the Americas, Indians have been able to assert control over their land, Bobby said at the time. Much of his energy in the 1990s went into the pioneering agreement to preserve the New York watershed. This also represented a historic transfer of wealth from city water consumers to fund economic vitality and environmental protection in the Catskill Mountains. Here, Bobby often antagonized establishment politicians, but forged new alliances to develop creative strategies. Richard Coombe, an upstate farmer and a Republican state senator, recalled of working with Bobby, "We could have remained mortal enemies, and instead it became a partnership." Bobby later wrote, quote, "Oftentimes I had the newspapers against me, and I felt isolated, and that this was an uphill and unwinnable battle. But I resolved it by knowing that I was fighting for something that was critical. The reservoirs were sacred," end quote. The watershed agreement marked his entry into high-level politics, and after it was finalized in 1997, New York's Republican Governor George Pataki called Ethel Kennedy to say he could hardly wait for Bobby to run for his job. In 2001 came Bobby's first and only incarceration for an act of civil disobedience. He spent 30 days in a Puerto Rican jail after joining a protest against the U.S. Navy's using the impoverished island of Vieques for a bombing range. "I hadn't been able to get them their day in court," Bobby wrote. "With my hands tied and the Navy poised to open fire, I felt all I could offer my clients was to join them." Vieques became an international cause célèbre, ultimately forcing the Navy to leave the battered island. Also in the early 2000s, Bobby embarked on a personal crusade aimed at exonerating his cousin Michael Skakel, imprisoned for a murder he didn't commit. "I support him not out of misguided family loyalty, but because I am certain he's innocent," Bobby wrote in the Atlantic magazine article, A Miscarriage of Justice. Eventually, he wrote a book about the case called Framed, and in 2018, Skakel's conviction was overturned and he was set free. Bobby also supported the release of Paul Hill, falsely convicted of murdering a British soldier during the Northern Ireland Troubles. Hill had married Bobby's sister, Courtney, and his confession was found to have been covered by, Hill had married Bobby's sister, Courtney, and his confession was found to have been coerced by three Court of Appeals judges in Belfast. You will learn in these pages about Kennedy family's near-fatal encounter with terrorists while attending the trial. Reflecting on the assassinations of both his uncle and his father, Bobby sat down in 2011, quote, "It is my native inclination to give wide berth to conspiracy bluffs of all ilk. But as an attorney and litigator with a passionate love for science, empiricism, and logic, I believe that facts are the foundation stones of all understanding, and that we have an obligation to pursue them fearlessly, even when they collide with conventional wisdom and even when their implications meet with disapproval or disfavor. This was certainly what he encountered as he came to realize that neither assassination could have been the work of a lone gunman. And after he took the remarkable step of visiting his father's convicted killer, Sirhan, in prison in 2018, he incurred the wrath of the majority of his siblings. Bobby supported Sirhan's release on both compassionate and legal grounds. It was approved by the parole board before being overturned by California Governor Gavin Newsom. During the two terms George W. Bush served as president, Bobby addressed hundreds of audiences citing the administration's abysmal environmental record and the millions invested over the previous two decades to corrupt science and distort the truth about tobacco, pesticides, ozone depletion, dioxin, acid rain, and global warming. He also published two exposés after investigating computerized vote stealing that enabled Bush to win the 2004 election. And he lambasted the increasingly corporate-controlled media for failure to report what was really going on. Mercury, one of the most potent neurotoxins known, had been at the top of Bobby's agenda. He had observed firsthand the birth defects caused by mercury pollution among Native Canadian children in Quebec villages. He'd witnessed the Bush administration's scrapping of regulations to limit mercury emissions from coal-burning power plants. And in 2005, he learned that mercury used as a preservative for childhood vaccines could be responsible for an epidemic rise in autism. "Privately, I was skeptical," Bobby wrote in his first article about the fraught subject. "I doubted that autism could be blamed on a single source, and I certainly understood the government's need to reassure parents that vaccines are safe. But ultimately, he couldn't ignore the dozens of mothers with injured children who came to his speeches." That's my kitty scratching. Sorry for the interruption. "But ultimately, he couldn't ignore the dozens of mothers with injured children who came to his speeches, urging that he look beyond the known source of mercury poisoning. Eventually, one of those women refused to leave his doorstep until he examined the evidence these mothers had been gathering. What he discovered in study after study was a whitewash by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about the potential dangers of mercury-based preservative thimerosal. That marked the beginning of a deep dive into a realm that no other public figure had been willing to undertake. In the early 1980s, American preschoolers had received only three vaccinations for diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. Measles, mumps, and rubella. Okay, so diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus is DPT. Measles, mumps, and rubella is the MMR. And polio. However, after manufacturers received blanket immunity following passage of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in 1986, a gold rush to create new vaccines by pharmaceutical companies quickly followed. Today, in addition to the DPT, MMR, and polio vaccines, children receive vaccines for haemophilus influenza type B, hepatitis B, rotavirus, pneumonia, varicella, hepatitis A, meningococcal B, human papilloma virus, annual influenza, and COVID. As the number of vaccines increased, so did the rates of neurodevelopmental disorders and chronic diseases in our children. Autism was really the tip of the iceberg, said Lynn Redwood, one of the mothers who approached Bobby and later went on to work for his organization. Today, one in every five children suffers with obesity and mental health disorders. One out of six have developmental disability. One in 10 have asthma. One in 11 with ADHD. And one in 13 has food allergies. In addition to vaccines, we have to look at all environmental toxins that contaminate our food, water, and air as potential culprits destroying our children's health. Bobby learned that the Centers for Disease Control, the nation's purported guardian of public health, had replaced an environmental health advisory panel with industry representatives, a move denounced by 10 leading scientists who wrote that, quote, regulatory paralysis appears to be the goal here, rather than the application of honest, balanced science, end quote. It was deja vu of what Bobby had observed with the Environmental Protection Agency's cozy relationship to the chemical giants it was supposed to be regulating. At the same time, in 2000, the CDC released a study in conjunction with Johns Hopkins revealing an 80% drop of all infectious diseases in the 20th century, attributable not to medical interventions with antibiotics and vaccines, but to better nutrition and sanitation. Freed to advertise on TV by another law passed in the 1980s, Big Pharma, as it came to be known, went beyond doling out huge sums to the new networks. The industry dispatched more lobbyists on Capitol Hill than the number of congresspeople, senators, and Supreme Court justices combined, giving twice as much money to federal officials as fossil fuel corporations. Quote, we use more pharmaceutical drugs than any other country, pay the highest prices, and have the worst health outcomes in the developed world, end quote, Bobby came to realize. Today, chronic disease has increased from affecting 12.8% in 2006 to 54% among our nation's children. Autism cases have soared from 1 in 10,000 in RFK Jr.'s generation to an astounding 1 out of every 36 children in 2023. Food allergies have escalated from 1 in 1,200 to 1 in 12. The richest country on earth now has the sickest children. As Bobby told his audience in Boston in April, when I'm president of the United States, I'm going to end the chronic disease epidemic. If I have not significantly dropped the level of chronic disease in our children by the end of our first term, I do not want you to re-elect me. Yet until now, the more Bobby called attention to this situation, the more isolated he found himself. Once a regular contributor to the editorial pages of the New York Times and other outlets, the last time Bobby published an op-ed was for the Huffington Post in 2009. After he joined forces with prominent businessman J.B. Handley, the father of a child diagnosed with autism, to prevent a vaccine mandate from passing the Oregon State Legislature in 2015, he began to be labeled as the leader of the anti-vax movement. Bobby summed up what he was experiencing. I've spent 37 years trying to get mercury out of fish. Nobody calls me anti-fish. I've spent 37 years trying to get pesticides out of food. Nobody calls me anti-food. I spent 30 years trying to improve fuel efficiency and get carbon fuel out of automobiles. Nobody calls me anti-energy. My partnership was the first and biggest investor in Tesla, and I was part of another partnership that built the two biggest solar plants in our country. I'm anti-stupidity. I'm against bad science and for good, robust science and for honest regulators. And we don't have any of those things. People call me anti-vaccine because it's a way of marginalizing me, making people think I'm a crackpot and keeping me silent. End quote. J.B. Handley described his relationship with Bobby like this. I was wary because he's a Democrat and I'm not, but I really believe that Bobby has completely absorbed the code that his dad lived by and views one of his roles as dismantling corporate structures. He has an extraordinary intellect. His capacity to understand and assimilate, process, and change his mind is rare. The final quality that makes Bobby extraordinary is just his humanity. Below all that, he's a street fighter, the guy you want beside you in a foxhole. You cannot intimidate or shake him. He would be on his last gasp and still throwing punches. Bobby has never abandoned the environmental cause. He's just broadened it. The same kinds of people who pollute the environment for money are poisoning people for money. He said in announcing his candidacy, "You'll hear this trope from the big polluters and their indentured servants on Capitol Hill that we have to choose between economic prosperity and environmental protection." And that's a false choice. We ought to be measuring our economy based upon how it produces jobs and the dignity of those jobs and how it preserves the value of our assets of our community. As a governor appointed member of an advisory panel to determine whether hydraulic fracturing or fracking of natural gas could continue in New York, he worked closely with an executive of Southwestern Energy named Mark Bowling. I think that Bobby and I learned from each other, Bowling later said. As a governor appointed member of an advisory panel to determine whether hydraulic fracking of natural gas could continue in New York, he worked closely with an executive for Southwestern Energy named Mark Bowling. I think what Bobby and I learned from each other, Bowling later said, is that the categories we tend to put people in, that's an industry person or that's an environmentalist, are unfortunate. In this instance, even though it cost him his job, Bowling sided with Bobby in pointing out that fracking was a bad idea. And state health authorities ended up banning the practice, a trend that has since spread to other states. In the Appalachians of West Virginia, Bobby's legal skill forced the DuPont Corporation to pay out $196 million in punitive damages, among the highest compensatory verdicts in the state's history. He had worked for 30 years to bring General Electric and the Monsanto Chemical Company to justice for dumping PCBs into the Hudson River that put some 2,800 fishing families out of business. And in what might be called his legacy project, Bobby continued to fight for Monsanto. In 2018, he joined with a legal team involved in mass tort suits over cancer-causing glyphosate in Monsanto's Roundup weed killer, which the company has claimed was as safe as salt for gardeners to spray. The National Trial Lawyers Association designated them, quote, trial team of the year, end quote, after a jury awarded groundskeeper Dwayne Lee Johnson an unprecedented $289.2 million in damages. Monsanto's new owner, Bayer, later announced it would stop selling glyphosate-based weed killers in the United States residential market. Bobby's willingness to engage across party lines reached a breaking point following Donald Trump's election in 2016. The incoming president invited him to participate in a new commission on vaccine safety and scientific integrity. Bobby accepted, but this never transpired, as we shall see, after Pfizer reportedly gave Trump $1 million contribution for his inaugural. Nonetheless, costing Bobby his long-standing ties to the NRDC and Pace University, which deemed him too controversial for further association. Then came the pandemic in 2020, when he began to ask questions that made him anathema to many fellow liberals amid the increasing climate of fear. Bobby wrote, "Are powerful state and corporate entities using the current crisis to remove basic rights and intensify pressures to promote vaccines and surveillance? Does anyone else feel the suffocating darkness of tyranny descending on our nation?" Over time, Bobby found another strange bedfellow. He has appeared for extensive interviews with Tucker Carlson, former of Fox News. "Tucker and I don't agree on 90% of things he talks about," Bobby said, "but he loves the First Amendment, and he's willing to stand up for it." Similarly, Bobby has found common ground with Steve Bannon on issues relating to Big Pharma, government corruption, and the widespread censorship plaguing this country. Bobby scrutinized the abandonment of therapeutics to combat COVID-19 and came to have doubts about the safety of rushed-to-market, government-subsidized novel vaccines, as well as the efficacy of lockdowns and masks. He pointed out that the relationship between Bill Gates and Dr. Anthony Fauci was more about collusion and corruption than true collaboration. He then found himself deplatformed by Instagram and Twitter and not allowed even to publish a letter to the editor in response to a series of media attacks on his integrity. When he decided to examine Dr. Fauci's career in light of the coronavirus crisis, he was shocked to discover cruel experiments by Dr. Fauci's National Institutes of Health on HIV-positive Black and Hispanic children in the New York foster care system. Bobby was also alarmed at how closely America's doctor, quote-unquote America's doctor, aligned with the biodefense industry after 9/11. For Bobby, personally realizing how deeply but quietly the CIA took part in the pandemic response mirrored what he'd painfully come to realize concerning the agency's likely role in his uncle's and father's assassinations. There you have it, folks. That's another big part for him running. I think that's my anecdotal opinion here. I'm going to read that again so you can not hear my anecdote. Sorry. I'm reading this book aloud for the first time myself, and when I do reading aloud like this, I tend to get more insight, if you will, and understanding of what has been written. Okay, here we go. Bobby was also alarmed at how closely America's doctor, in quotes, America's doctor, aligned with the biodefense industry after 9/11. For Bobby, personally, realizing how deeply but quietly the CIA took part in the pandemic response mirrored what he'd painfully come to realize concerning the agency's likely role in his uncle's and father's assassinations. Skyhorse publisher Tony Lyons recalls, "As I learned more and more about the book, I began to feel it was the most important that we'd ever published. But Bobby wouldn't cut corners. He was completely invested in making sure it was impossible to impeach what was in the book. Altogether, 2,194 fact-checked footnotes, and believe me, those are amazing. But when the real Anthony Fauci appeared late in 2021, the book was ignored by the mass media. Not a single review appeared, and boycotted by bookstores. Amazon sales accounted for the overwhelming majority of hardcover and ebook sales that quickly soared into the hundreds of thousands. Bobby donated all his royalties to Children's Health Defense, which in the course of the pandemic reached a peak of 4.7 million visitors per month. Over the two decades that I've known him, Bobby has had a number of opportunities to seek high office. Already in the early 1990s, he'd been touted as the best candidate to fill a vacant United States Senate seat in New York. Later, he considered not only the Senate, but perhaps pursuing the governorship or becoming head of the EPA under Obama. Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura asked Bobby late in 2006 to run with him for president on an independent ticket. I'm laughing because when I'm reading this, if you listen back to this later, I'm reading this during a time when we're about 10 days out to hearing who Kennedy's VP pick is. And there has been lots of media and lots of gossip swirling around about who is it. And Jesse Ventura's name is one of those names that they're talking about. So I'll read this again now since you've had my anecdote. Here we go. It's going to be hard for me to read this book like that without giving you a little bit of anecdotal of my own opinion, you know, having been a volunteer for Kennedy since he started. Okay, so let's see here. Where are we again? Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura asked Bobby late in 2006 to run with him for president on an independent ticket. Each time he decided against it while raising six children. Now all those children are grown. Democracy is further under siege, and like his father, Bobby believes he can offer the American people a positive choice despite what many pundits consider insurmountable odds. While considering whether to do this, he addressed nearly 1,000 attendees at CHD's first national conference last October in Knoxville, Tennessee. I watched the earth become biologically impoverished, he said. The world my kids are growing up in, 80% of the insects and 85% of the songbirds that I knew are gone. This year, all the snow crabs in the Bering Strait disappeared. In the environmental movement, every victory is temporary and every defeat is permanent. If a species or a landscape is destroyed, you're never getting it back. And with us, the same is true. If you lose a child, things are never going to be the same. A silence settled over the auditorium as Bobby continued. God speaks to us through creation, and as we diminish the abundance, the diversity, and the richness, our relationship with our Creator also gets diminished, along with our capacity for imagination and self-fulfillment. We are all foot soldiers in an apocalyptic battle against the forces of ignorance and greed and totalitarianism. It's really important to maintain your spiritual center if you're going to be an effective warrior. We are not going to win this by beating them with force of arms, but from our integrity, our compassion, our kindness, and our humanity. As he spoke these words, I remembered a story related by Kent Correll, a friend from Bobby's law school days. It was a rescue story about a child playing in the yard of a friend's house. Correll told me, Bobby looked up and saw a hawk that he could tell had spotted the child and was in a hunting mode. There were about 60 or 70 yards between him and the child. He took off running and the hawk went in at the exact same moment. It struck a talon into the kid's cheek, but Bobby swept him up and the kid was fine with only a scratch. That kind of observation, sensitivity, and knowledge of his environment and animal behavior enabled him to react and get there before the child was harmed. You hear about this happening with oncoming cars, but how many people have grabbed somebody out of the way of a diving hawk? Time after time, we see Bobby speaking truth to power fighting corruption, exposing greed, without any fear of the personal consequences. He has refused to bow down to what William Faulkner described as the end of man. Like Faulkner, he believes that we will prevail because of our compassion and sacrifice and endurance. And he has dedicated his life to being a leader, a healer, and a warrior for justice. You may not always agree with Bobby F. Kennedy, you may not always, when I see sometimes Robert, I think of Bobby, sorry, that's my own problem. You may not always agree with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but never doubt his honesty, his sincerity, or his dedication. And that is the end of chapter one. So this first piece has the prologue in chapter one, and we will go on to read chapter two in another episode, and the name of that is called A Role Model Named Rachel Carson. But that will be next time. Thanks for listening. I hope you're enjoying this book. It's a good one.